I have
current geek.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, and we're back. Welcome to Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, Geeks of the World, and you, to keep you current on all things that matter most, especially in the nerdy world. I'm Scott Johnson, and that's Tom Merritt.
Hey, when do I get my gavel?
Never. Are you supposed to have a gavel?
Call these proceedings to order!
That's right, plus that'd come in handy for the quiz part, don't you think?
Yeah, it would.
Yeah, I think that would be all right. Is it true that it would be better if Tom had a gavel during the quiz? Oh, I'm sorry, that is incorrect.
Hey, wait a minute.
It's not better.
When did we vote?
We're glad to be back, and I want to say this before we get too deep in here.
I would call it Gavel McCloud. Sorry.
Please don't, though. Tom and I are thrilled that you guys responded so well to the first episode. Pretty much nothing but happy praise and lots of really good signs of a successful first week on iTunes and other places. And when you crack the top 30 in iTunes overall, that's a big deal. And it is officially the fastest downloaded show for its first week in the history of the Frog Pants Network. That's kind of
Do you mean that like people download it really fast?
Just really, really short, so it downloads really quick.
Or it's like an average of 20 megabits per second.
That's right. We cut it up into little 5 megabyte chunks, and there you have it.
They grease the pipes for Current Geek.
That's right. They sure do. Speaking of greasing the pipes, that voice you just heard is Mr. Brian Ibbett guesting with us this week. How you doing, Brian?
Hello. I'm good. How are you guys?
Good. My co-host on TMS, the raconteur who created
That's where I've heard him before.
Coverville. Film Sack and many other things. It's always fantastic to have you on additional shows, man.
It's great to be on additional shows.
I'll tell you what else will grease your pipes. A little bit of French cheese, maybe. I don't know what that means. Patrick from France, everybody. Hello, Patrick.
Hey, I'm not sure what it means either, but I like it.
You like it? Really?
Yes.
Well,
no, not really. I was trying to be polite.
Well, thank you both for being...
Wow, a Frenchman being polite.
I know, right? What? What's that all about?
I'm so nervous to be on this show.
You shouldn't be nervous to be on here. We're all pals.
But I haven't been on a show with you in so long. Mm. It feels like, you know, I'm being invited to some grand event of some kind, which it is, of course.
Well, it's very grand. Wouldn't you say that, Tom? Yeah. Would you describe this as grand?
I'm in my purple robe.
With a gavel and like
with my
stuff.
Gavel McClellan. Mm-hmm.
You have a little smoker thing.
Pipe greasing of Coverville nature and all of that. It's very official.
Yeah, very nice. All right, well, let's jump right in with our top stories.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
All right. What do we got? What's
We've
up?
We've got Current Geek Top Talk. These are some good stories this week. We're going to start talking about the Steam boxes that were announced at CES. 13 of them. Mm. So, Scott, if you will, I would like to give a quick rundown of all 13.
Okay, go.
All right. Most of you will not understand these words. That's okay. 13 hardware partners with models from $500 up to $1,800. Alienware with fancy colorful LED, Alternate with Core i5 and GTX 760, CyberPower with Core i5 or AMD and Radeon R9 270, Digital Storm with liquid cooled Core i7 and GTX 780, Falcon Northwest customizable CPU and GTX Titan, Gigabyte Core i7 Intel Iris Pro 5200, iBuyPower quad core AMD or Intel Radeon R7 260X, Material.net Core i5 GTX 760 OC, Nexpa Core i5 GT760, Origin Core i7 and 2 GTX Titans, ScanCore i3 GTX 765M, Webhelen Core i7 GTX 780, Zotac Intel to be announced, and GTX to be announced.
Good Lord, man. Wow. Are you...
Look out, Federal Express guy.
I was going to say, do you remember those ads? You're that
Not
guy.
That, but Federal Express.
It felt like some kind of stock market thing. I don't know. It was amazing.
And pork bellies came in under expectations.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how you know someone is a real, like, true professional podcaster. It's incredible.
Yeah. Nice read, Tom. That was fantastic.
It was from the heart.
So I actually have something very important to say, I think, about these Steam boxes. It's been a long sort of anticipated thing. Who would they license it to? Who would be the initial vendors? Turns out just about everybody.
Yeah, turns out everybody.
But I think it's confusing, and I don't mean to me or you or anybody maybe even listening to the show, but I think that they want to get their foot into the living room. That's the whole goal of this. thing. Otherwise, these PC makers already make PCs with Steam on it. This is all about big picture. This is about Steam OS, and this is about integration in the living room and trying to compete with consoles. I think this is confusing as hell. I don't think there's any... I'm trying to think of who would go into a store. I mean, no parent is going to go into a store and try to find out what their kid meant when he said, I want a Steam box, and try to make sense of this. And there won't be any stores. It's going to be all online. It's going to be weird and hard and confusing. And I think this creates and breeds market consumer confusion on a level that is not good for Valve or good for the ultimate goals they have here. Do you agree, Brian Ebbett?
I do. Yeah, I mean, this is as confusing as the current PC market is, you know, with, all right, do I want this video card? Do I want this processor? What about this power supply? Do I want AMD or Intel or i5 or i7? I think part of the joy of a console, like, you know, the current PS4 and Xbox One, is that there's usually just one flavor. Maybe there's a few flavors with different hard drive sizes, but you get something and you know that everything is going to be tested to work on that something. When you get one of these, the thing I'd be worried about is, yeah, this one's going to be compatible with about 80% of the Steam games out there, or this one's not going to work with your higher end rendering or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, maybe put some limitations on it to say it has to be within these specs. And I'm sure they did to some degree, but I mean, these are all over the board as far as like, video cards, i3, i5, i7.
Yeah, I expected some standardization from the announcement, and it's not that.
No.
The processor isn't as big of a deal here. I think the graphics card could be, but I think Steam is expecting that everything they put out on Steam will at least run. It may not run well, but it'll at least run on all these machines. And is it really all that different than what we have with PC gaming now? I mean, these are all the same names with the same, in fact, bigger variation of specs when you want to buy a PC for gaming, right?
Yep, totally agree.
It's not any different from that. In fact, right. It's actually a little more limited because these are only one box per company with different spec variations.
Yeah, and I agree completely with what you just said, and that is at the core of my issue with all of this. And by the way, I am pro these guys doing this. I am pro Steam, big picture, living room integration, PC development. All this stuff is great. I have no problem with any of it. My biggest issue with it is that it's not, if they want to compete with consoles, which is, do you want a PlayStation or an Xbox? That's the choice people make, or Nintendo. Mm-hmm. You've got your choices. They're clear.
It doesn't, well, I can't really talk too much about this because, as you know, I work in the game industry. So yeah. There's an obvious conflict of interest, but thinking about the pure hardware side of it, I think you have to think of this, at least this is just an announcement. There's going to be a marketing coat on it later down the line. But think of the Android market. You have tons of different hardware specs. It still works with the same system. So I think the situation might be similar there.
Yeah.
I think what we'll end up with is, you know, 13 enter, maybe two or three leave, right?
Right.
So, you know, when you look at that $500 one, that one probably has a chance of capturing the low end of the market because most of these are around $1,000 or more. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we'll find out if the Alienware with its fancy LED catches everybody's eye and which one actually seems to be the best marriage of SteamOS with these boxes. But it will not always be like, here's 13 choices. You know, it'll narrow itself down.
Yeah. And not to get too hung up on this one story, because I know we want to rip through these, but just one final note. And that is that you, dear listener, will be able to still make your own version of these.
True.
Which is essentially a PC, but there's a lot of things you could do to make it much more Steam Box-like in terms of its remote capabilities, the controller compatibility with that new weird controller. All that stuff can be yours for much less and on your own. So if anything, it's great because they're continuing that trend of this is how PCs go. It's not a closed system. I just think if they really wanted to get the hearts and minds of people who aren't necessarily steeped in PC gaming already, this seems a little confusing. That's all. Anyway.
Let's continue to talk CES and talk food and 3D printing.
What?
All in one. 3D Systems announced two Chef Jets, the Chef Jet and the Chef Jet Pro, which will print sugar-based food. The Chef Jet runs $5,000, the Pro $10,000. And they're not the only ones. There were a couple other people at CES showing off 3D food printers. Spanish Natural Machines can do chocolate and ravioli, not the internals, just the pasta part. And Chalk Edge can do chocolate.
I'm not eating their ravioli, dude.
Well, you got to stuff it yourself. You print out the pasta and then you put the filling.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah. So you're folding it. Brian, you're a bit of a cook.
They missed out on a huge opportunity to call these Baker bots.
Oh, yeah, you are. Yes.
That's pretty right. Good, actually. Patrick, you guys make a lot of cheese and weird food over there. What's your...
that's what I was going to say. This sounds like a novelty until they have like a, you know, like a cheese jet. I'm not interested.
Yeah.
And a cheese jet could be either a cheese making 3D printer or an actual jet made of cheese.
You know, we have those in America. They're called spray cheese.
That's right.
And I can make a cube with spray cheese.
That's true.
You just print it yourself.
I think this it's interesting. I think the candy thing is interesting and actually makes sense to me. I could see cake decorations just taken off, like making all kinds of ornate stuff. Well,
yeah,
because
the pro can do colors, right? Mm-hmm. So then you can decorate cool. cakes all day long.
Yeah.
Once you can do more than just sugar-based stuff, I guess, I don't know. How, you know, the 3D printers are obviously super cool because they open lots of possibilities, but sort of the sugar-based stuff and the chocolate-based stuff, you can pretty much do chocolate in your home already, and it's not very complicated. I'm not sure.
You can also melt down plastic in your home and make widgets. But
yes, but that is very complicated. Making these kinds of simple dessert things is not impossible at all.
Did you see some of these helices they made out of sugar? I don't think I could do that on my own.
Yeah.
So I think it's a little bit of a novelty thing.
I think the market for these are going to be your high end restaurants. Like, you know, I just came back from Vegas and they've got all these restaurants where, you know, your last course of your meal is going to be this chocolate grenache with a blah blah blah, and there'll be like a little sugar tetrahedron sitting on top of it, or
chocolate Arbuckminster Fuller.
That's right, exactly.
Wow,
exactly.
Okay, well, let's see how they do. I don't know. I think it's interesting at the very least, and a novelty, yes, maybe right now, but in the future, you know, we all want replicators. We all want walk up to a machine and go, "I want a burger and fries," and have it, you know, narrow it down to my favorite and then poop it out.
Sure. If that's what we're talking about, obviously, yes, it would be cooler. But
baby steps, man. Baby steps is all I'm saying. We're working.
There's also a little flashback that came out at CES. Belkin bought the Linksys brand from Cisco a while back, and they're bringing back the classic blue router, just like the old WRT54G. Oh, anybody remember that? Yeah. Ring a bell?
Still have one right over there.
I got one out there in the garage myself.
Yeah. Who has never had one of those routers?
I can't imagine that. It's like the law, isn't it? Right. You have to have at one point used one.
You'd argue that the reason Cisco bought them in the first place was because they were so ubiquitous. Yeah, they were everywhere. Because
They bought them at the time. So the 54G still happened.
I saw the news and I realized that I could be nostalgic about a router. That's so weird.
It is really weird.
The WRT54G. That was like a really cool router.
I turned it into a tomato router.
I got one originally because I didn't have any computing devices necessarily that were all wireless when I first got my first router. And it was just a straight up, what were they before G, whatever they were, A routers or whatever, B router.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I got it for my my DS at the time because the DS is supported Wi-Fi and I think my PSP did. I bought that thing just for my portable game handheld systems, and it's ironic that I barely used them for that. I ended up using it for everything else eventually, but
I remember buying one because there was some issue with the PlayStation and UPnP, like you couldn't do it with an Apple AirPort router, and so you had to have a router that could support UPnP. And
that was a big deal.
Yep, so that's why I had a Linksys, not like this. This is like the. The Space 1999 version.
the new one, by the way, is not called 54Z or anything. It's the Linksys WRT 1900 AC. It's a dual band, and it's $300.
Jeez!
Wow.
$50
more than I paid for it.
Right? Wow.
I don't remember if the 54G was ever $300. It might have been when it first came out.
I don't know what that is in francs or whatever space money you're using over there in France now. Euros, sorry. But that's a lot of money for a router. My gosh. I'm shocked.
Yeah, it's open source.
And AC, though. I mean,
is that good? AC is good?
That's the current one.
All right. Yeah. Fine. $300 later, you got a blue router again. Congratulations, everybody.
And it's dual band, which, again, not new, but nice.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody see Michael Bay freak out at the Samsung announcement?
As a guy who knows, understands certain social anxieties, I think I feel for him. I feel like a lot of people are like, I can't believe I feel bad for Michael Bay. And I'm like, oh, go watch The Rock again. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with a lot of what Michael Bay makes. We all hate Transformers. But
a lot of people have not heard Michael Bay's explanation of what happened. So we've got that from michaelbay.com. He actually posted pretty quickly after it happened. This is what he wrote. I was about to speak for Samsung for this awesome curved 105-inch UHD TV. That means 4K. Yeah. I rarely lend my name to any products, but this one is just stellar. I got so excited to talk that I skipped over the executive vice president's intro line, and then the teleprompter got lost. Then the prompter went up and down. Then I walked off. I guess live shows aren't my thing.
You know, what a lot of people don't realize is that he used that exact same scene of him walking off in a previous CES.
With an explosion dive.
With a different explosion, right?
That came up when we watched, what was it, The Island, right? With the reused footage they used in Transformers.
From the Transformers, yep.
Or the other way around or something. That was a weird thing for him to do, but whatever.
I read the description of it, and then I went and watched the video, and the description didn't really do justice to how, as much as the classic Linksys router made me happy, and I didn't realize I could be that happy about a router, that thing made me, I guess actually it also made me happy, so they both made me happy.
Shouted Frida, is that what you're talking about?
But yeah, it was so awkward, and go watch the video, it's worth it. It's just weird.
It's
and
also,
poor guy.
I feel bad for him, but I also felt like the guy, the VP, the Samsung VP guy, the first question out of his mouth when things went south was, so where do you get your ideas? That's the worst question to ask a creative guy.
I'm sure it was it was one of the questions that had been prepared for
the
next.
Yeah.
That's an awful question, but yeah, and I would have loved it.
But imagine him once he starts walking off after, like, literally, for the people who have not seen the video, he literally stays 50 seconds on stage and then mid sentence just walks off.
Yeah.
And
the
guy, the VP who's there, he's like, all right.
It just feels like a little hitch in the road at first. Like, oh, he's lost the teleprompter. That's kind of funny. And then when he just, without explanation, without saying anything, just turns and walks off and no one knows what to do next. That's what I think made this a viral hit.
It would have been far better if he would have said, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to go in the back room and throw up.
You mean if he would have ibbited?
Yeah. Yes. Oh, is there now a term for that?
Yeah, it's ibbiting. It's on the Urban Dictionary now. Look it up.
Right.
Well, good for him. I've finally close it out with my favorite story here, Tom.
Yeah, IO9 has a really interesting article from Vince Miklos about science fiction themed bars and restaurants that you can go to. And it's mostly a pictorial. It's just pictures of these things. In Switzerland, there's that Giger bar with lots of Giger based sculptures and art pieces inside, including table legs. There's the last bar before the end of the world, or say it in French, Patrick, because it's in Paris. Dernier bar avant la fin du monde.
Basically. Le dernier bar avant la fin du monde,
Okay. Jeez.
Yeah.
I'm impressed, Tom. I didn't know you could whip out a little French when you had to.
If I get enough mucus in the back of my throat, sometimes I can do it.
Basically, all you do is just leave off the end of just about every word.
Yeah.
but that one has like a big singularity double doors, and in case of revolution, break glass with a bunch of pictures of the Guy Fawkes mask. Actually, I think they're actual Guy Fawkes masks in that little case. Mm. And secret rooms. There's an AT-AT out front of this bar.
Yep.
That's awesome. And an R2-D2 as well.
Get your picture with that. I think the Geiger one's my favorite, but it's also the one I would probably least want to eat at. I mean, it looks amazing, and it's like an alien ship in there, but it's gross. Everything's like a spine and like
it does.
Ribs.
It totally. Yeah. It looks very reminiscent of the Nostromo, not the Nostromo, but the ship that they visit on that planet.
Yeah. Yeah. The one that's with the weird throne seat that they tried to replicate in, Paramecium. What was it called?
Prometheus.
But I'm now only going to refer to it as Paramecium from now on.
I've actually eaten at the one of the ones down the page. Anyone who's visited LAX has seen the Encounter restaurant, and it is.
I didn't know you could go in there.
You can, and it's a really cool bar restaurant. open, you know, open all the time, and you can go in there and get it's like
it's
diner
a bar food. That's open and that serves drinks.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's amazing.
Well, because it's an airport. You feel like if I'm not flying, I can't go in there, but it's not behind right. TSA or anything.
No, no. And so we actually dropped somebody off there. We all showed up to LA at different times, dropped someone off, and then went to go eat and then took my later flight.
Oh, look at these. These are great.
It's talk about your paramecium. That's got that very like space paisley design in the LAX one. There's also the way station in Brooklyn with the police box.
Oh, yeah. That one's cool. That one looks great. I mean, I wonder what kind of food they have is the real question. None of these really talk about that. They're bars and, you know.
Oh, no. You don't go to the Lovecraft bar in Poland and order the, Portland, not Poland. It's in Portland. Sorry. That's you don't right. order the squid.
Yeah.
Can I have some calamari, please?
Or in Portland for that matter. All right. Well, those are your
what
big...
worries me is that like the AT-AT and the R2-D2, I mean, are they just setting themselves up for a lawsuit though? A cease and desist at some point?
They're outside. See, they could just be like, I don't know. There's locked
that's
up.
A public. Yeah. Public. Well, there's this one has a stormtrooper in it and Han Solo's gun and neon at the top.
Yeah.
And,
that's pretty badass.
By the way, the le dernier bar avant la fin du monde means the last bar before the end of the world for those who are curious.
Is that how the books read for you
is
guys
that not
too?
What I said right before?
No, you said I thought you said restaurant of the end of the universe. Didn't you say that?
No, but that's what I gathered. Like they wanted to call it that, but
is couldn't. Essentially that, huh?
Yeah. Exactly. Which would be great if every night they show the world or the earth exploding or the universe exploding.
That'd be great.
Bob 303 says the LA restaurant, LAX restaurant just closed.
Oh
no. Just now, like for the day, or
like just for the day, man. Or do you mean like we can never go there again?
I don't know. Well, give him a minute because that's how long it'll take for him to get your answer.
Exactly. Yeah.
While he's checking on, while he's answering that for us, I'd like to tell you about our friends at HelloFresh.com. HelloFresh.com. Speaking of food and good food, make your own house your own sci-fi restaurant. Why not decorate it up with Geiger stuff and then cook something awesome again? Every week they have these chefs and they make these recipes and you pick what you want. You see this list, you go, man, that looks good. I like that beef thing or that shrimp thing or whatever. And they'll send you the exact farm fresh ingredients straight to your door. They're awesome. The food's amazing. I've done it and it's really, really good. Healthy meals in less than 30 minutes. Visit HelloFresh.com. Find out if they deliver to you. They're all over Europe. They're in the States. They're growing all the time. If they're not in your area now, they will be. And if they are, use this code for your first order. Current Geek 50 for 50% off all first-time customers. That's Current Geek 50 at HelloFresh.com.
In case you missed a look at one of the best-dressed beauties of the early 20s, here's another look at her. Had enough?
Way, totally have had enough. Let's get to the main stuff here. A couple of few topics that I think are interesting, and a lot of this stuff tends to be CES-related, but one thing that jumped out at me was Vizio's announcement that they're going to have a $1,000, $999 4K television. And we could argue till we're blue in the face about whether or not 4K is worth getting into now because content's not there yet and what's the point. But to release a 50-inch 4K TV at under $1,000 and a 70-inch for $2,500 at 4K seems pretty good. Does that negate all this argument about whether or not we're ready for 4K or have the content to even put on the television itself? It seems like, you know, it's a no-brainer. If you're getting a 50, like me, so Ibbot, you're going to the store, you already know you're going to walk away with a 50-inch TV. Why not go ahead and get this
spend
one?
Spend the money? Yeah, because it's one of those things where you know that this is where things are going to eventually end up, but you also don't want to jump on Betamax when the VHS train is, you know,
right.
Competing. There's no, as far as I know, no competitor 4K. Everything is looking like that, but... On the same or on the flip side, what content can you get right now with a 4K TV that you can't already get with a $50 Roku or a PlayStation 4 or an Apple TV or whatever?
Right.
I'm not sure that's the question, though. The question is, if you want to buy a TV now, which actually is going to be my case fairly soon, do you want to buy an HD TV and then be stuck with it for 3 years as the 4K content starts rolling out in the next, you know, year or so? That's the big
question. Well, that's the question. And now, normally, I would have said if these TVs were 12 grand, 15 grand, whatever, like the original plasmas were and stuff, I would say, no, you need to hold off. There's no reason to jump on now because the content's not there and that price sucks. But that price is really good. Like there are 50-inch standard 1080p TVs that are about $900 right now. So it's not like that's some crazy, ridiculous, overpriced thing. If you're already in the market, then yes. But I think if you just got one, like me, not too long ago. We picked up a 70 at a pretty good price of another Vizio.
You got a 70?
Yeah.
You got a bigger house now.
Well, the basement, yes. The basement definitely holds a bigger TV than it used to. That's definitely true. But it was a really, really good price. And Vizio makes a great TV. And it was highly rated. CNET and a bunch of other people gave it really good reviews. So it made sense for us at the time. And I knew 4K was on the horizon. Had I known, though, that 4K was on the horizon at as low as $999 up to maybe $2,500 for bigger sizes, I may have waned, you know, a little bit.
I think this is surprising a lot of people, well, everyone, how quickly 4K content is, well, not content, but I mean the ecosystem is taking a hold, because Vizio is not the only company that announced cheap-priced 4K TVs. There have been a couple of, you know, unknown brands that you probably wouldn't want to trust, but there have been a couple. I think that's the third or the fourth sub-$1,000 4K TV for a reasonable price. So it's really coming pretty fast, and YouTube is going to start broadcasting in 4K, and you know, Netflix is going to start rolling that as well. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the content that's been filmed in the past few years, especially in movies, has been filmed in 4K or 8K. So they have the content already. I think that was going to be one of my forecast discussions, but I think 4K is going to become a real option a lot faster than we would have expected even 3 months ago.
Yeah.
That's going to become a real option fairly soon. And the industry is also hungry for new stuff, right? The 3D craze is pretty much over. That thing's dead. Mm-hmm. So 4K is the next thing, and they need to move units. So I think everyone's going to be moving in the same direction, and things are going to go pretty fast.
Tom, you in the market for a new TV?
Well, first of all, it's Ultra HD. Let's get our buzzwords correct, yeah, everyone.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Okay.
But also, here's something interesting. So Vizio comes out with a TV with the next generation high resolution at a great price. Why does that sound familiar to me? Let me take you back to 2004 at CES. Vizio announced its upcoming 50-inch HD plasma, shipping in April with a native resolution of 1366 by 768, retailing for the semi-affordable $4,999.
Wow.
And they blew people away later by putting out some LCDs at below $2,000. In 2004, you could subscribe on DirecTV to 6 channels of high-definition programming. Not a lot, but it was there. You can't subscribe to anything with Ultra HD or 4K programming right now. Netflix has it coming, but it's coming exclusively to LG first. It's not coming to everybody yet. YouTube has some, but it's not everything they do. It's a specialty experimental program. So with hardly any content out there, we're already cheaper with these plasmas, with these 4Ks than we were when HD was sort of around the same point in its development.
Yeah. I don't think they have the option to pad the price with this is hot new technology that's expensive to manufacture, because it's kind of just a resolution bump. We're not really talking about it's a processor and resolution bump. It's not like there's some crazy technology behind that any more than there were with, you know, computer monitors that one did 1080p and one did less than that, sure, and others do more. But here's the bigger question for me, and that is, can you, at least still in 2004, you could get some over-the-air content and eventually cable and satellite, but over-the-air content now, aren't they limited?
Yeah, like, they can't do 4K broadcast, I don't think.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter. You don't,
I may be wrong about that, but...
Yeah. But the over-the-air and the cable and everything, yes, it does. Obviously, that's where the bulk of the content comes from. But you also have alternate delivery methods. And in 2004 and 2005, the only way you would get content, or the huge majority of the way you would get content, was, you know, if your cable provider didn't do it, then you were effed.
Yeah.
sorry, I almost cursed. I almost became French all of a sudden.
Yeah, no doubt.
But now you have a lot of actors that can one up each other by providing that kind of content, and each one is going to be trying to get a competitive edge. So I think the ecosystem is very different, and it provokes an acceleration of the evolution of the ecosystem. So
yeah, I also
things are not exactly comparable.
I agree, and I think it's just a matter of it's a lot like the console generation this time. It's not the kind of bump that is as noticeable as the last one. You start to have diminishing returns with this technology.
You mean from SD to HD?
Yeah, that was a huge jump. Or going from a PlayStation 2 to a PS3 was a huge jump. And you could charge $599 for that console and kind of get away with it, although they sort of screwed themselves with that. But the point is, that was a big, huge generational leap. This latest one, not so much of one. And I feel like the TV one is also not so much of a generational leap. It's just kind of it's a little bit of a bump. And you know what? 1080p content's going to look pretty good on those 4K TVs. It's not like they're going to look like SD content looks on a 1080p TV. So you start to lose, well, it's just diminishing returns. And I feel like that's why this is so cheap out of the gate. There's a $1,000 TV because they can't get away with charging $3,000 or $4,000 for that this time around.
What, a bunch of people just replaced their TVs to HD TVs, right? Because there was finally a compelling reason. It wasn't just a strange form factor. Right. So they got to do something else to get people to replace and keeping it cheap as part of that. By the way, Japan is going to start broadcasting in 4K in July 2014, but you have to do it on new spectrum. Yeah. And so there's a whole big article at Hollywood Reporter from this past September going through the fact that broadcasters are worried that they're going to get left out eventually as people switch to 4K because everyone assumes 4K is coming over the top. It's coming through your PlayStation. It's coming through Netflix. They're not thinking of over the air, which is both good and bad. It means, oh, we'll be able to get things over the internet maybe, but it also could mean that over the air option for cutting the cord goes away when 4K comes along. So
is there any benefit with 4K with current Blu-ray technology? Do you get any more out of, or will there be yet another physical format?
I'm sure you can do upscaling.
Yeah.
You mean of the existing content?
Of the existing content. Yeah. There's nothing. Yeah, I mean, that's all made for. Yeah.
I think upscaling is your only path on that. But probably if you want true, non-filtered, non-compressed, straight up, pure 4K, there'll have to be a new physical format.
There will be. Yeah.
Well, no, Blu-ray can do 4K, I think, the existing format.
I think you can store it on it. Yeah, yeah. And the format can read it. But it has to be encoded that way. You can't take it out.
And the player would have to do it.
Yet another new version of Inception.
Yeah. How many copies of Inception can a man own is the question.
Well, there's that secret copy of Inception that's on the disc inside the copy of Inception.
Oh, I got it. All right. Yes, Patrick, say that again.
About the upscaling, the thing is, unlike the SD upscaled content, the HD upscaled content is probably going to look pretty good. So that's another reason for buying a 4K TV, which is going to jumpstart the thing. You already have content that it's not actually going to look that much better, but at least you can justify it by saying, hey, I'm going to upscale.
Well, the main point is it's not going to look much worse. It's not going to look so much worse. And that's where you had the DVD to 1080p problem was a problem. That's a huge leap in resolution. And so you noticed it, but the 1080p to 4K, not as much. So I agree with that completely. Speaking of HD, there's a lot of talk about HD audio, I wanted to talk about this real quick.
Yeah.
I mean, what does it mean in the music world that everybody's... So here's the two prevailing thoughts, and Tom, please jump in if I get any of this wrong. But the two prevailing thoughts are, we now have a generation consuming music and audio content who are cool with 128K MP3s and don't really think about it or care that it doesn't sound as good as vinyl did or whatever. So now these companies are all acting like there's a giant demand, and I think it's their own manufacturer demand personally. There's a demand for higher resolution, better audio, and HD audio is an Intel standard, is it not, Tom? I think it is. Didn't Intel come up with that? Anyway, somebody like that, Intel or somebody.
Looking.
Yeah, look that up. I should have looked that up.
I was going to say, because this has been around for a while. HD audio, I remember HD audio when... Yes. In early 2000s with DAT recorders and stuff, right? Weren't those doing?
I don't know if they called it HD, but yeah,
I don't know if that was the same standard. I think they may have reused the name. Very environmental.
Yeah, remember the DVD or the DVDs were going to be the hot new music format. That never happened. Then there was super discs or whatever they're called.
Super CD. Yes.
That never took off or really made any kind of splash. So now it's all about digital audio being high definition, whatever that means.
Well, then there's HD radio, which is different than HD audio.
Sure.
And then there's that HD audio on your phone,
yeah,
where you're supposedly get that really clear, you know, it's crazy.
So as a guy with such the biggest music library I've ever known personally.
Right.
Do you care? Like, how excited would a guy have to be? But like, no, what are you to want it?
It's funny. I'd rather spend my money. Bottom line comes down to this. I've got to hear this to be able to compare and say, okay, that makes enough of a difference. You're hearing the chairs of the drummers squeak when they move around to hit the drums or something like that. I'd have to hear it to see. But just based on what I'm reading right now, and I'm looking at this as well, I'd rather spend that money on a better pair of speakers, you know, and get more out of the music that I've already got rather than, I'm not sure.
I guess, kids don't care. Like my 19-year-old, well, she doesn't care, man.
And everything that's on my computer is either 160, 160 or 128-bit or lower for the most part. There's some high-end stuff on there. But if I'm ripping a CD, I'm ripping it in either 160 or 128 for size.
Wow.
And
so you're not even going
I think you just lost all credibility with the people who would like HD audio.
You know, those people probably would not want to download a 3 gigabyte Coverville episode every week.
As time goes on and bandwidth gets better and storage gets better, those restrictions fall away. So it becomes did people get used to and what do people really care about? I have to say, with the new shows that I've launched this month, I'm surprised at the number of people who really want the spoken word audio to sound better. There's a setting in Google Hangouts where if you choose studio, your audio sounds better than if you choose the other. And the other is supposed to be better for spoken word, but it's just more compressed. Yeah. Most people don't notice, but there are definitely folks out there that do.
Yeah. I remember.
Even if it's a spoken word show, I'd much rather listen to it in 128 or higher because 64-bit just is too crunchy, too AM radio.
I agree. We do this show. I do the TMS. I do a 96 because it's just so damn long. Mm-hmm. This show I do in 128. And there was a day not many years ago where people would complain about that. My ISP has a cap or that's too big and it takes forever. I don't ever get that anymore. Those complaints have gone away. So I feel like we're safe now, but it's just an issue of at some point diminishing returns. At some point it sounds good enough. And, you know, there's an entire generation of 20-year-olds, you know, 15 to 20-year-olds who've grown up not on MTV, not on vinyl, but on YouTube and crappy compression audio files. And I don't think they care.
No.
Some
don't know, Scott. Doesn't show my care.
Exactly. So we'll see how that goes. All right. Tom, what's this thing about Patrick and his iPhone thing? What happened here? What is this?
It was just a suggestion.
I like it.
Stuff. You know, the reason I threw it in here is Patrick said, hey, did you guys include the 7th anniversary of the iPhone announcement, which happened earlier this week? And it was January 9th, 2007, that Steve Jobs got up and famously said, it's a phone. It's an internet communication device because we couldn't figure out a snappy name for that part. It's an iPod. Phone, internet, iPod.
I believe he said phone, iPod, internet.
Yeah.
Please.
Did he say it? I apologize for changing the order for comedic effect. but he said those things in some order. Anyway, you weren't the only one. There was a podcast that I follow that did a special episode about the 7th anniversary of the release of the iPhone. I actually did not have this is the announcement date, not the release date. I said that wrong. I did not have the announcement date in our chronology of tech history, Scott. I have the release date in there. Mm. So it's now in there for the next time we do a go round on that. But I'm wondering what, you know, usually it's a 5-year, 10-year, 15, 20-year anniversaries. Why 7? Is getting people all excited.
Yeah. What do you think, Patrick, since you suggested it? Why do you think that's got people all woolly?
I don't think it's 7. It's just that amongst all of those, you know, post-PC revolution mobile bull hooky, the iPhone is the one that everyone remembers. Obviously, it's the one that started it. The reason I thought it would be, I wanted to mention it was I sort of had an epiphany of obviousness a few days ago, which was I realized how much how many people who had never downloaded a program on a Windows or Mac computer before were now spending their days downloading programs because of the new interface and form factor, you know, the UI of the iPhone and iPad and obviously Android devices. And I think we've sort of underestimated the seismic change in the influence for programs. By calling them apps, we kind of diminish their importance or their nature, but they're actually programs. And that's a part that I think gets a little bit underestimated, I guess is a word for it. People now get programs for their devices all the time. And that was something that very rarely happened before for normal people. I don't know. I thought that was an interesting thing that we didn't really think about much.
Why not 6 years ago? You know, or why not next year? Why this year? It seems to be there's more attention on this particular.
Do you think people are just anxious for 10 to get here, so they want to celebrate early? I mean, I feel like it's a weird thing because in the case of that phone, I don't care if you're an Android loyalist or you love that new Windows phone or whatever your deal is right now with mobile, you cannot look at that keynote as anything less than a pretty revolutionary step. It was a big freaking deal.
Oh, for sure.
You know, it's funny. He was saying everything he was saying at the time has gotten a lot more weight and meaning now. He was saying, you know, we're changing the face of computing forever, and all the kind of emphatic crap that we assume is marketing speak. Usually, in that case, it turned out that it was right. And I think the reason for the 7 years being more significant, it's not really about the 7 years, is that now everything has sort of come to pass. Everything is accomplished. And the iPhone is not the hot new thing anymore. If anything, it's become less relevant than the other, obviously Android. So it's sort of now it's happened. Now we're behind the revolution part of it. It maybe wasn't as much the case 1 or 2 years ago.
That makes sense. So maybe here we are year 7 and people are like, wow, look what we've done since then.
Yeah.
And it just starting to occur to everybody. Because
we've spent so much money on iPhones.
Well, it did kind of come like a snake in the night. That's not a phrase. I'll just go ahead and use it anyway. But it's like it just snuck up on us. Yeah, like a snake, you know, climbed up there and just.
The thief in the night.
Is it thief in the night?
Stole your snake. Well, don't forget
to. Be a snake. Don't discriminate.
Sure, why not? Yeah,
wasn't it like at least 6 months, maybe a year before we could actually put apps on our iPhones?
iPhones, that's a good point, Brian.
Yeah, you were locked in with the stock 12 items on your screen. You could
do web apps. Remember, that was the big push. Like, we don't need apps because you can do everything on the web.
That proved to be poo.
That was funny because it was the web thing is what, you know, no one wanted, and it was super open. Anyone could do anything they wanted. And then they put the apps on, and people are like, but we want something that's open. And he's like, just do web apps. It works.
Yeah.
And people,
that was a funny, that was a funny transition, because what people think they want is not always what they want. And, you know, the web, you know, CSS was the way you were supposed to be doing that stuff. So imagine us today with things like Clash of Clans and that Candy Crush Saga bullcrap, playing that stuff as CSS games on a browser. Oh, it's just ridiculous.
Actually, it's more possible to do that now seamlessly than it was then.
Yeah.
Like back then, you're right. It absolutely was ridiculous. Now, the Financial Times has a great app that's just a web app. You save it to your home screen and it works just like an app.
Yeah.
And I've seen some pretty good games. They're getting better and better, where you just don't know the difference.
Yeah, and HTML5 is really powerful now. And there's a lot of things to say about that, but I just, you know, there are too many offline experiences you couldn't have. There's too many, like the flexibility was just shite, because if a server was down, well, you're not playing your game because your server's down.
Right. But you can locally cache. Actually, I have a really good time zone adapter that is from 5 years ago that was locally cached. So you didn't have to be connected.
Oh, well, that's cool. But nobody else was doing that. But either way.
Yeah, nobody cared because they wanted to go in the app store and charge money and make money.
Yeah. So either way, it's revolutionary. I think the UI was the thing 7 years ago, but a couple years later, it's the App Store, and that changed everything for everyone after that.
Yeah, now nobody understands that the web is actually an interconnected thing. And they're like, why isn't your thing in my app?
Right.
Do you have a Yahoo app?
Is it coming to my app yet? Because I only live in this one app.
Oh, maybe we shouldn't.
That's my 90s web guy, angry old man.
I liked it. You should go on tour with that voice. I think it's
when I was a webmaster, we just linked to things.
All right, we are, ladies and gentlemen, jumping straight into my favorite part of the show, at least based on last week, and that is the pop quiz.
America scores and wins.
All right, here we go. So does France. Apparently, we're going to see France scores and wins.
Oh, is this France versus Colorado?
Oh boy,
this is great. Patrick's been dreading this. He's been dreading
it. This is like high school. I'm still not going to score.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. You're going to go first so you can get yours. You can get it out of the way. You can be Michael Bay.
I suck at trivia. And I even lost the chat room, so I can't even ask them for answers.
Well, I've given you a favor here. This is all French trivia, okay? All of it. So enjoy the stereotypic nature of my questions.
What kind of fries does McDonald's sell?
What kind of dressing does Scott prefer in his salad?
Perfect. I wish it was that. Now I'm kind of regretting that it isn't that. So here it is, Patrick. When you hear this sound, that means you got it right. When you hear this sound, that means you got it wrong. So
wait, I listened to the previous show and it was the other way around.
No, it was not. Dang it. Only in France is it backwards. Right. So here you go. Question number one. What year was the Eiffel Tower built?
1902.
Judges? Incorrect. 1889. What?
Negative one because he's French.
What year? Oh, yeah. But I forgot to mention, Tom has some strange scoring techniques, so be ready for those as well. When did France start using euros instead of francs? What year?
2002.
Incorrect. 1999 is the proper answer. Yep.
I was in Japan.
Yes, you were.
I was using yen.
Shouldn't have been
in Japan. Lose 2 points.
Where in France was famed professional wrestler Andre the Giant born?
Can I say like a direction, like the south?
No. It is Grenoble is the correct answer.
No, Grenoble it's
points.
Not.
Who knows where that is?
Grenoble? Yeah. Okay, I don't know how you say it. Who was the president of France before Nicolas Sarkozy?
Jacques Chirac.
Correct. Well, nice job.
Yes! I got one.
1 point, that's easy.
What is the longest river in France?
The Seine River?
The Loire River.
Should be the Seine, giving him a point.
Okay, it should be. I love the way you score this. All right. A French president's term is 5 years. How long was a term before it was reduced to 5? What?
Seven.
Oh, no, that's right. Sorry. He's correct. Gosh. 7.
So I'm going to give him 2 points because Scott screwed up the point award.
Yeah, give him an extra
point. Minus 1 point for Scott.
7 3 times, so I might have...
Yeah, Scott lost.
Sorry. Scott lost a point. All right. What is the national bird of France?
Are you sure you want me to say it?
Yes.
It is the rooster, but I could use another word.
What? What were you going to say? The cock? Is that what you're going to say?
Yes.
Correct. We'll give it to you. It's the Gallic rooster.
I'm going
to give
him 2 points for discretion.
Yeah, nice job. How long is the Paris Metro transit system?
Long?
Yeah, in kilometers. I'll hint you that.
Well, there's like 14 different lines.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to say 96 kilometers.
Incorrect. It is 214 kilometers, which is about 133 miles.
You count that doesn't count. You don't count just the metro. You count the suburban trains.
Minus 2 points for whining and arguing.
Next up, in what year was the first Cannes Film Festival held?
19 something.
1946 is the correct answer.
It is 19 something.
Point for the century.
All right, fine. Point for the century. And then finally, who saved France during World War II?
We saved ourselves by not fighting and not avoiding conflict.
The correct answer is America. All right.
Point for honesty.
Point for honesty. Okay, fine.
Let me show you the Colorado national bird.
The double bird is what you're showing there.
That's right.
All right, Brian Ibbett, it's your turn. These are music questions.
Of course.
Because that's your forte.
Terpstra gets narrowed down to Back to the Future.
Yep.
I get the worldwide
The worldwide music industry. Music All right, industry. Here you go. Right. First question. In the Eminem song, My Name Is, he says his teacher wanted to flunk him. How old does Eminem say he'll be in the next semester?
19?
35 is the correct 35. Answer.
Love.
0 points.
Garbage has released 5 studio albums since 1995. Which one of their albums was never released on vinyl?
This has to come from Iceform. I know he's a huge Garbage fan. Yeah. The second one, version 2.0.
Bleed Like Me is the correct answer.
Bummer.
Number 8. What is Baby Spice's real name?
Oh, geez. That's Emma Bunton.
Correct. Nice job.
Wow. 2 points for how the hell?
Yeah, no doubt.
give me the rest of them.
He's into those. After the death of Cliff Burton, which bassist tried out for Metallica but was told he was too good? I actually know this one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, of course you know it. You made the question.
I was going to say the same thing.
Jeez, I don't know.
Don't know? It's don't Les know. Claypool.
I didn't have a good
Jerry
guess
was a race car driver. That guy.
Yeah, wow.
No points.
No points for you. Before joining the Foo Fighters, which musical artist did Taylor Hawkins drum for? The hint is musical artist, not band.
Right. Jeez.
2 seconds.
I got nothing.
Alanis Morissette.
No points. Really?
And her Jagged Little Pill.
I would have said Spice Girls.
Who is responsible for the laughter in the Pink Floyd song Brain Damage?
That was Sid Barrett.
That would be incorrect. It was Peter Watts, their road manager and father of Naomi Watts.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I didn't know
that's
that.
That's a pretty good
Who knew?
One.
0 points.
In the Beastie Boys song Intergalactic, which fictional character is mentioned twice?
Jeez, I know the song. I'm going to say Captain Kirk, just because Nina brought him up in 99 Luftballons.
It's Spock, but you were so close.
Point for being close.
All right, point for being the second in command. Just prior to forming Garbage, Butch Ving, Duke Erickson, and Steve Marker were in what band?
Oh, geez, I know Butch Vig produced Nirvana, but I think he was in some other... What was he in? Wow. Okay, stumper on this one too.
Firetown. I don't know who that is.
Negative one for just being a long time answer.
Finally, yeah, no doubt.
Long time for nothing.
Final question. Here you go. Who did Elton John get into an argument with in 2008 saying, quote, I could still snort under your table? Or sorry, I could still snort you under the table.
Oh, really? In 2002?
Yeah. 2008, sorry.
Oh, 2008?
Yeah.
I'll
give you a hint. She's the sister of somebody in Game of Thrones.
Lily Allen?
Correct, everybody. Lily Allen is the correct answer.
Really?
Brian, or Tom, how'd,
one
they
point.
Do? How'd they do? How'd we do?
Patrick, after swinging way down into the negatives, rallied at the end for a final total of 3 points. Brian Ibbett pretty much treaded water most of the way through his, but surged at the end to 3 points for another tie.
Another tie. Yay! Nice job, everybody.
Well,
you're supposed to let the American win. Just kidding. You're not.
I said so much at the trivia that for me a tie is kind of a win, so I consider that one.
All right, we'll give it to you, man.
I'm just surrendering. Yeah.
The spiritual winner of that.
What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
The future promises even more startling things to come.
Indeed, this is our forecast segment. It's not a show, it's a segment. And it's a chance for us to make a prediction and then bounce it around a little bit. Tom, you have one.
I do. This week, my prediction is going to be a 5-year prediction. And I predict that in 5 years, there will be no more analog cable. Now, that's not to say that Time Warner, Comcast, and the rest are going away, but they will be delivered at worst in some kind of digital cable, but I'm saying that cord just goes away altogether and it's all done IP over the internet.
I read this as analog cable, like no more cables that weren't digital, not cable.
Right, like
cable.
Audio cables and...
Yeah.
There will be no more cables. We will be a wireless land. Mm. That's my
prediction. That would be fantastic.
That'd be
actually.
Cool. So what do you think, guys? Tom, or who wants to... Ibbett, what do you think? Who is here? It's only two of you. Jeez.
As a guy right now who... is required. Well, I won't say required. I could cut the cord and be awesome like Tom and Brushwood, but I'm actually required. I can't do satellite right now because I'm kind of married to the TiVo interface. I love the TiVo interface, and that
you
requires
get a TiVo through DirecTV.
Yeah, but I don't like their interface either.
But it's the TiVo interface.
No, it's a DirecTV hybrid, isn't it? It's like a.
Is it the TiVo straight up TiVo or is it a combination?
Well, it's not a straight up TiVo. It is a DirecTV TiVo, but I thought the interface was still the TiVo interface.
If it's the TiVo interface, then I've been lied to.
Oh, well, I haven't seen it, so I'm not going to contradict.
But, you know, I'd be happy to see this. I'd be happy to see, well, I'd be happy to see all cable go away just because, you know, everything around my desk is just a tangled up mess. But specifically as far as video content cable, sure. I got no problem with that. It's, you know, one less thing I have to leech off the neighbors.
Patrick, do you still is television still brought to you on the backs of mimes and cheese peasants, or how do you guys do it over there? What do you have? Is it cable or
carrier pigeons?
Oh, perfect.
That works well. And you know, our national bird, the cock. that's such a stupid bird to have a national.
It really is a stupid bird. We have an eagle. Yeah. Yours is a thing an eagle would
eat.
I
know.
Yeah.
Everyone
eagle
goes
would
need
a rooster.
An eagle would
roosters
need
roosters are tough. They're fighting birds. Yeah, they hey, get you up in because, the morning.
If yeah. Benjamin it's Franklin would have had his
they're,
way.
They're proud. They're proud and like go cocky and
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But
I'm
yeah.
sure.
So anyway. And choice. So anyway.
Hey, if Benjamin Franklin,
morning, you know, okay.
Yeah. If Benjamin Franklin would have had his way, the turkey would have actually been the United States national bird.
Oh, was that his?
Too much electricity.
He wasn't
yes.
thinking. Yeah,
yes,
that's fine. All right.
So yes, cable. Is it going to go away? I don't think so. I think yes, it will eventually. But 5 years is a little bit too short of a time.
Analog
frame.
Cable.
So what does that even mean?
So in other words, you just get an internet connection and then the cable company goes, do you want to add our television service, our streaming service to your system?
Yeah. Yeah. I have no idea.
Well, the five years part's the important part, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think some people, the systems are not all going to be upgraded to IP within 5 years, I don't think. So we have a tendency of underestimating how much the inertia of some parts of society. And I think they're still going
to
be
all IP now. They just go to your digital cable box instead of to the internet. So I don't think it's as, I don't know that it's, there isn't some other complication in routing it to the internet, but
especially in France, it's all cat hair and bamboo over there.
Dude, we invented TV over IP. The first company that did it, that did triple play, which is phone, internet, and TV over IP, is Free, which is a French company that started doing it maybe 10 years ago.
Wow,
so
really? That's cool.
There you go.
All right, fine.
Yeah. It's a really innovative. We have a bunch of, you know, we brought the connected toothbrush to CES.
Yeah.
We've got some tech chops.
Do you remember when, I remember when Superman threw half your Eiffel Tower up into space because it had a bomb on it. Remember
when was
that
built again?
That was, when was that? 18 something? You've got, Patrick, you got some stuff down here about 4K, which you talked about a lot already, but you think that 8K and 4K are coming quicker than we all probably think.
Well, yeah. If you want to talk about like actual serious and reliable predictions, I think 8K is gonna come a lot faster than we would anticipate it to come.
So 8K on the heels of it, like that's the part of this prediction that gets me the most tweaked because of the idea that 4K is just around the corner and then 8K is nipping at its heels. That bugs me because I don't want to invest. There's another reason not to invest in a 4K TV because pretty soon you're totally out of date.
Maybe not at its heels, but I think like within 5 years we're going to be with 8K where we are now with 4K. You know, it's going to start appearing within 4 years because once 4K, the thing is 4K is almost here. Let's say within a year it's going to be relatively commonplace, and then people have to focus on the next thing. When I say people, I mean the companies and the. There's no basically. For the between the HD and 4K, we had the 3D distraction, and that really took people away from the resolution evolution. And I think 8K is going to come. Yeah, is going to be put in place very soon after. Actually, 4K is I don't want to say new, but when I started hearing about higher resolution than HD, a lot of people were talking about 8K already. So I'm wondering if we're not going to be surprised at how fast it arrives.
Yeah. I kind of think you're right about 8K. I think you're a little ambitious on 4K. I think next year CES, we'll be talking about people launching 4K services. Like, that'll become a trend to look for. So I think we're more like two-ish years out for that part. But I think we are going to leapfrog right into 8K really fast because it's an easier transition. And everyone says there's really no reason, and not everyone, but a lot of people have said there's really no reason to bother with 4K. Just go to 8K, which could slow down adoption of 4K, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, and then your 16K is right behind that, and then your 24K.
Yeah, but then the problem we have with 8K is that if we start getting down the IP route, especially you guys in the US, you're gonna start having a huge bandwidth problem with 4K already, but 8K is out of the question.
Everyone says that. So? There's plenty of bandwidth. It's the companies that are trying to overcharge that are sowing these seeds of FUD to everyone. There is no bandwidth crunch. There is absolutely no bandwidth crunch. Yeah, Do not succumb to the propaganda. Everything is going to be fine.
Sir, I was talking about the infrastructure. Like, do you have actually the infrastructure? Is broadband widespread enough? And, you know,
As soon as they turn it on and sell it to you, it will be fine. You can do 300 megabits per second over DOCSIS right now. They want you to believe that you need to pay a lot of money for it so that when they do turn it on and they charge you $100 or more a month, you're like, well, it's because of that bandwidth crunch.
They're the guys I see as the problem. They're the infrastructure I'm worried about, not the actual infrastructure, but these companies and how long it will take them to realize that charging for what they charge for is ridiculous and that we're too smart for that. That's the part that slows us down.
The glimmer of hope is that more and more gigabit Ethernet companies are rising up to become competitors around the country. And maybe not in your neighborhood, but in a lot of neighborhoods, that's happening. Cities are even getting in on it in Seattle, in Los Angeles, even although their plan is crazy. They're trying to say, well, we need to roll this out. So it's not going to be easy. It's going to be ugly. But I don't think that's going to be a thing that actually stops adoption.
Now, in France, are they just going to all go, yeah, no problem, we got it. We're 4K is here, everybody, join in. Or you guys have to have similar problems. It's not like they're just waiting to give everybody stuff for free, right?
Well, infrastructure-wise, it's easier to put in place. But, I mean, if there's no problem in the U.S., I guess there's definitely no problem in France because our infrastructure is really... No, but it's true. I mean, it's easier to establish.
Right.
I agree with you, Patrick. I don't think you will have a problem. I think there'll be a lot of frustration and talking and arguing around it. But in the end, it will actually happen.
Yeah.
People said the same thing about HD. Like, you're not going to be able to get HD over the internet. Forget that with bandwidth the way it is. And we haven't had an issue.
Netflix is doing great with that. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, it's doing fine. It looks really good on a 70-inch television. So, I just more like to poke Patrick in all the French places.
Well, we don't have have Netflix yet. So that's where it hurts.
That's where it really hurts, I'll bet. Yeah. Well, get on that. Let's jump straight to some emails here. Got a couple, some feedback. We always like these. Mike Murray wrote in, says, you guys put everything I wanted into the show and then added even more awesome stuff that I hadn't even thought about. Love it, says Mike Murray. Thank you for that. That's awesome feedback. I'm getting a lot of that this week. So we're very, very happy you guys are enjoying the show.
Well, it's going to change after this year.
I know. We've ruined it today.
Sunk it before it had a chance to sail.
Thomas Chambers wrote in, says, on the idea of Amazon starting its own deliveries, we talked about this last week, it would be like Netflix starting an ISP. Not a bad idea, but just logistically tough. That's a pretty good comparison.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
Good one, Thomas.
Because they're not that different. Then finally, Mike from Arlington Heights, Illinois. Tom's that near where you were born anywhere?
The other end of the state. I knew people. I dated a girl from Arlington Heights.
Ah, the girl from Arlington Heights. You should have written a song. It sounds and rolls off the
Daily Herald.
Yeah. hello, current geekers. Question for you. Now that Disney has brought Star Wars back to Marvel. I don't know what that means. But anyway, it's all at Disney now. What collaborations would you like to see? A Doctor Doom and Darth Vader supervillain team up? Chewbacca becoming a guardian of the galaxy? Or do you believe Marvel should just keep those worlds separate? I think he means Disney because Disney controls both. That's from Mike. My personal opinion is you're going to see all kinds of crossover, but not in like self-serious ways. You'll see Marvel and you'll see Star Wars enter in a big way, for example, into that Disney Infinity kids game thing. I don't think you're going to go to a movie called Darth Vader versus Dr. Doom.
Right.
Darth Doom.
I don't think anyway. Brian, you're a big comic fan.
I hope not. No, I say keep them separate. There was a lot of this stuff in the 70s and 80s between DC and Marvel, between movie properties and Marvel. Marvel even was, you know, had a Star Wars comic for a long time before Dark Horse got it. And the only one I can think of that's been recent, and when I say recent, probably in the last 10 years, was an X-Men Star Trek The Next Generation crossover. And that actually might have even been longer ago than 10 years, but I remember not being terribly excited to see that. So no, keep those properties separate.
In the comics, you can kind of get away with it more, though. Like they can screw around there and do some one-offs and stuff. Whereas with movies and things, you kind of have a tougher time.
For whatever reason, if it's a comic, it doesn't necessarily have to be canon. And the hardcore comic aficionados can say, well, that's not lore. Yeah. It's not lore. It's outside of lore.
You can have Batman and Spawn hanging out for an issue. But
right, actually, for a whole series,
Yeah.
I thought Patton Oswalt had a pretty good take on this.
What do you say?
He in his filibuster on Parks and Rec, he brought the Avengers and Star Wars universes together.
Oh, I remember. Never saw that episode. Kept hearing about it. He's really good. Look up.
You can find the uncut version, which has the entire filibuster. Not all of it made it into the episode.
Really?
Yeah. Just search for it on YouTube. It's amazing.
YouTube. Now, what is this YouTube here?
It's a place my wife works. Little company.
Okay, great. Little startup. 4K. Little mom and pop.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
I was just going to say, I just hope that Disney brings back Star Wars. Already, if they can manage that, I'll be happy. Then start thinking about messing it up again.
You mean acceptably bring it back.
Agree. So how do you feel?
No, I mean, effectively, like after the horror of the trilogy prequel. You know, that really irked me when they bought them, everyone was like, oh, there you go, Disney is going to ruin Star Wars. And I was like, have you seen the last three movies?
Yeah, they ruined it.
Like, so
I feel like approaching this Marvel thing from the perspective of that same worry when Marvel got bought by Disney, I went, oh boy, that doesn't seem good. Where I'm worried about that big corporation, blah, blah, blah. But they have been good stewards. And they've shown, you know, in the films anyway, they've shown that they care about story, character, and other stuff that usually they kind of don't care about. And that's been really strong for them. So I don't see any reason why they would do this any different. In fact, even be more careful. I mean, it's the biggest property in the history of ever. Right. So you can only make it better from what it was, I think. I don't think it gets as bad as the prequels were. How could it?
You have to work hard, wouldn't
right.
you? Yeah. You know,
they would have
to do it on purpose.
Yeah.
And maybe we
already were going to have tons of lens flare, thanks to what's his name. So that's something.
Yeah. You know, you say a bit.
Maybe we owe the prequels a big debt of gratitude, because if it weren't for the prequels, we probably wouldn't have as low hopes for the
lowering expectations.
Right. Exactly. It's like, well, how bad can they be? They can't be as bad as the prequels.
Yeah. In a way, it works.
Bob Iger.
It really works for them to have had that terrible legacy to come off of, because it has to be better than that. So we'll see how it works out. Thank you for your feedback, everybody. You guys are awesome. If you want to send more emails, you can. Currentgeek@gmail.com is that address. Also, Tom, we have a Reddit page. What?
Yeah. Big thanks to Scotty Rowland, who made Reddit pages for Current Geek, as well as Daily Tech News Show and Cord Killers at currentgeek.reddit.com. And then Tom Gerke got in and prettied it all up, so it looks all Current Geeky with the logo and everything. If you would like to submit stories that you'd like to hear us talk about on each week's episode, go there and do it, and you can vote on each other's stories as well.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Patrick, real quick, what's that app you use to read Reddit? You were raving about it on Twitter, and I wanted to...
Oh, Alien Blue.
Alien Blue.
Awesome.
And it kind of introduced you to the whole...
Blue.
Oh, like blue, like the color
like
blue?
Like the color. Yeah.
Okay.
Blue is the warmest color.
Yeah. Is it though? I think it's the coldest.
Well, you'd have to ask the director. Alien Blue. It's awesome. On the iPad, especially. I never really could get into Reddit because it's all, it's all over the place. You have to open a different page for each link and all the, so the interface is a little bit quirky. But with Alien Blue on the iPad, it really just works. You can go through your links, and I love it. I'm finally into that infinite circle of Redditness where you're like, just one more link, just one more link. And you end up going to bed at like 3 a.m.
And this app did that for you. Awesome. That's great.
Hmm. Yeah, Alien Blue.
I'm checking out right now.
Yeah, please go check it out. I want to thank our guests, man. You guys were awesome. Episode 2 in the bag. Thank you for that. Brian Ibbett, besides TMS, FilmSack, and all the other hooch, what is going on in your world that you would like people to know about? What other thing can they go find you doing?
Well, you can download the, speaking of apps, you can go download the Mercedes-Benz radio app and hear a bunch of great music and shows on there, including a version of Coverville called Under the Covers, which is specially made for them. And you can also Under the Covers, because they wouldn't take Coverstadt as a name. Yeah. and you can also go to Coverville Records and check out all the great stuff that Andrew Allen is doing over there.
Yeah, the creator of today's theme of our show, Current Geek Theme, which is fantastic. Guy's a talent to be reckoned with. Patrick, what about you? Anything cool going on you want people to know about?
Well, you know, podcast-wise, I don't know why I said it like that. Podcast-wise, I'm doing French shows, so I don't know how interesting that will be to our audience. But you can follow me on Twitter if you want some awesome Reddit links and GIFs and stuff, or GIFs, from Reddit and or GIFs. And you know what? If you have any kind of royalty-free music, you can go to my brother's royalty-free music website called Music in Cloud, and he does all the music there, and it's pretty cool. So go check it out.
Nice.
musicincloud.com.
Nice, very nice. Thank you both for being here. Tom, any words of wisdom, final thoughts?
Hey, I just wanted to tell people that there is an alternate cover of the comic 10 State that I wrote along with illustrations by Len Peralta, the cover done by Mr. Scott Johnson. So if you haven't picked one up, I finally got my copy yesterday. Mm-hmm. And it really looks like a real comic.
They look like a straight up off the shelf graphic novel compilation. It's insane how well those turned out.
So go to LenPeraltaStore.com for the special Scott Johnson variant cover. Do it now.
Support us. Support Len. Support Tom. Support us all, damn it. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode. Guests are being worked out right now, but they'll be awesome. Trust me, just like they have been up till now. Big thanks to our guests again for being here. Oh, gosh, what else? At Current Geek on Twitter. Follow us there. That's a good thing to do. You can also find me at Scott Johnson, Tom at Ace Detect, Brian at Coverville, Patrick at Not Patrick. Email us again at currentgeek@gmail.com and at currentgeek.com. Find the show and all that other stuff we might want to send you to. That's going to do it for us. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time.
Fiction Improbable presents My Abstract Life by Gord McLeod. Things aren't always as they seem, my daddy used to tell me. Early on, he taught me that the books with the flashy covers might not be the most interesting, or that the movies with the colorful posters could be boring. Later, it was the pretty girls, that sometimes they were the last ones you wanted to talk to. It was a lesson that sank in well, at least until the next flashy cover, colorful poster, or pretty girl came by. Those were always my biggest weaknesses. Book covers, movie posters, and pretty girls, and never more than the time two of them worked together to make my life hell. She was a real beauty, maybe a year or two younger than I was, working at the new high-tech library downtown. I saw her walking down Main Street one day, saw her drop a hair comb. Beautiful thing it was, all made of delicate wood inlaid with what looked like gold. It was almost as beautiful as she was. Of course, I grabbed it and followed after her, thinking of how lucky I was to have a surefire way to introduce myself to her. She'd be grateful to get something like this back. Naturally, I did what any young smitten fool would do in my situation. I waited till she turned her head to the side and grabbed a pic with my phone while she was in profile. Then I spent a couple of minutes being one of those annoying jackasses that walks and fiddles with his phone at the same time. Facial ID this picture. Do you recognize any of these matches? No. Facial ID this picture. Do you recognize any of these matches? And so on. I was stubborn, but even I gave up after nearly walking into two poles and half a dozen people. Artificial intelligence help systems were pretty primitive back then. Even today, the AIs just can't compare to a real person. I was going to have to ID her the old-fashioned way. I saw her head up the great front steps of the library and disappear inside, so I did the same. I'd never been there. It only opened recently. I have to admit, I was pretty shocked to see that it didn't house any books at all. What kind of a library has no stacks, no shelves? The place was huge, with all kinds of sitting spaces and partitions I had to assume were for studying and reading. Maybe they were trying to be the first all-digital library or something. I don't know. I didn't see the girl, and that was what concerned me the most. There weren't that many people around, and I wasn't that far behind her. Should have been able to spot her easy. "Welcome, library patron," a voice said to me. "Is there anything I can help you with today?" "Not likely. I'm trying to find a girl who just walked in here." "Not likely. I'm trying to ID a girl who just walked in here. Can't get a match." "If you have an image of the girl you're trying to identify, I would be pleased to assist." "You can do that?" "If I have a visual record to match against, yes. There are several information terminals by the front doors. They are equipped with suitable cameras. Present your image to one of them." I looked around, and sure enough, a small bank of public access terminals lined one wall of the entrance. A curious series of tubes ran up the wall, one tube next to each terminal. They looked both strange and oddly familiar, like something out of an old movie, maybe. I made my way to the nearest terminal and held the screen of my phone up to it. There was a camera mounted in the bezel, and within seconds the voice said, "Ah, yes, Ms. Barlow. She is employed here. What is the nature of your business with her?" As the voice spoke, the terminal displayed a list of ways to get in touch with employees you needed to get hold of, and I looked those up. There were the usual ways, you know, video chat, text message, even email, though nobody ever did that anymore. But the one that caught my eye was way older than email. Pneumatic tubes. That's what they were. You used to see those in old TV shows and stuff. You put messages or small items in little plastic capsules and stick them in a pressurized tube, and whoosh, the capsule was sucked away to wherever you wanted it to go. It was the best thing I'd ever seen. There was one catch. A note beside the pneumatic tube option stated that in order to use the tube system, you had to be a member of the library. Well, of course, that settled it. I wanted to talk to that girl, and the tube system seemed perfect. I could write her a note. The personal touch was always so much better than AI-relayed messages. Enclose her lost comb, and tell her I was waiting out front. I had no doubt she'd be out right away to see me. It was perfect. "Thanks," I said. "I just need to return something she dropped to her. Guess I need to join the library first, though." "If you require any assistance with the sign-up system, please don't hesitate to ask," the voice replied. I started poking around right away, and it wasn't long till I was deep in the sign-up process, and believe me, it was quite the process. I'd gotten library cards before, but none of them had questionnaires quite like this one did. It was exhaustive, going over all of your reading, TV watching, and movie-going habits. Hell, it even wanted to know whether you wrote at all, and what you liked to write about, if so. The one that really caught my eye, though, was this. "Would you like to share your knowledge and experience with other library patrons through our Mindshare program?" "Mindshare?" I wondered aloud. "A most marvelous system. It allows patrons of the library to share the knowledge they've accumulated throughout their lives with others. It enriches the community and offers significant benefits over traditional AI expert systems." That one sounded a little weird at first, I have to admit. It gave me a funny feeling. I thought back to Daddy's words, though. After all, what harm could sharing knowledge with others do? I could at least find out more about it and make a final decision then. So I checked off that yes, I'd like to join the Mindshare program. As soon as I touched that option on the screen, I felt the most curious jolt I'd ever felt in my life. It was like something snapped. I got real lightheaded and dizzy, couldn't tell up from down, left from right. My vision got funny too. Everything was kind of gray and fuzzy. Have you ever seen a really old TV, the kind from before streaming, even before cable, with the big antennas sticking up on them like rabbit ears? They'd get all fuzzy and snowy looking if they weren't tuned to the right channel. My eyes felt like that for a while. After a few seconds, it faded, though. That's when I started to know that integration had taken hold, and that I'd been worked into the network with no trouble at all. I started to know other things, too. I knew that this was a new kind of library that didn't need books to interface with all of the knowledge humanity had to offer. That it did, in fact, carry almost every ebook ever published. Abstracts of all of them were flooding my memory. I knew that the girl I'd followed, Emily Barlow, now knew me better than I'd ever known anyone before, and that I knew her just as well. And I knew that I would never be leaving the library again. At least, the copy of my mind I'd agreed to share wasn't going to be leaving. Through the library's video cameras, I saw myself put the girl's, Emily's, comb in the tube and send it off with a letter. I couldn't tell what her reaction was, The Emily I knew was a copy, like me. I saw myself leave with her, the physical her, a short time later. I can't begin to tell you what that felt like. I couldn't follow them. I mean, us. I was, most improbably, one of the library's living reference guides, and the physical me wasn't even aware of it. And that, dear patron, is how I came to be here answering your questions. Is there anything more I can help you with today? I said to our latest guest. My Abstract Life, copyright 2012 by Gordon S. MacLeod. This work is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. Music is Neptunian Fanfare for Theremin by John Mark, licensed from Pond 5.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.